Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
Welcome to DW's Africa Link program. I'm Isaac Mugabe, your host.
And I'm Crispin Mwakideo at the social media desk.
Coming up on the program, Kenya's Electoral Commission meets with presidential candidates ahead of vital elections amid fears that the opposition has connived with judges to postpone the elections.
You change and mess with that date, we will not accept you denying the people of Kenya their constitutional right to elect their leaders.
And we've got reactions on that Kenyan story as well on Facebook.
That's right, indeed, Crispin. U.S. President Donald Trump's eldest son admits to meeting a Russian lawyer last year before the U.S. elections. We hear from an expert.
Well, I think it adds his popularity. Ratings are very low already. The decisive point will be if there is a political willingness on the side of the GOP, which in turn depends on the electorate.
These stories are much more to come up on the program, but first, here's a chance to hear what's been happening around the world.
This is DW News with me, Jane Ayeko-Kumet. The European Parliament has threatened to veto a plan by the British government on the status of EU nationals after Britain leaves the bloc, calling it a damp squib. The body says it will reserve its right to reject any agreement that treats EU citizens less favourably than they are at present. The body says Britain's plan would cast a dark cloud of vagueness and uncertainty over millions of Europeans by giving EU citizens living in Britain fewer rights than those of British citizens in other parts of the European Union. Russia confirmed on Monday that Donald Trump and President Vladimir Putin had discussed forming a joint Russian-US group of cybersecurity. Washington heavily criticized the move once it became public, forcing President Trump to retract his statement, saying that he did not think it was possible and that it was only a tentative proposal. Trump said on Twitter early on Sunday that he and Putin had discussed forming an impenetrable cybersecurity unit when they met at the Hamburg summit. Iraq forces are still battling Islamic State militants in a small area of Mosul, a day after the Prime Minister Haider al-Abid said his forces had liberated it. Brigadier General Haider al-Fadil of the Iraq Special Forces said Iraq forces will need to carry out clearing operations to root out sleeper cells and defuse bomb traps. Iraq commanders believe that that hundreds of IS fighters remain inside the group's last enclave and are using families, including women and children, as human shields in a fight to the death. You're listening to DW News. Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe on Monday pledged to increase cooperation with Finland in Arctic issues and furthering Russian relations after talks with Finnish President Sauli Niinisto. He said his country would increase its role in the agency by positively contributing more than in the past.
It is also quite vital that we keep on raising high the flag of free trade. With this view in mind, another important outcome of our meeting was that President Niinisto and I concurred to cooperate toward concluding at an early date Japan-EU EPA, which reached the in-principle agreement this time.
In Libya, clashes between rival Libyan forces east of Tripoli extended into a second day on Monday. The fighting began on Sunday when armed groups opposed to the UN-backed government tried to approach the capital Tripoli but met resistance from rival groups that have aligned themselves with the government. It has left the coastal road shut, preventing residents from returning to their homes. It is the latest in a series of attacks by armed opponents of the government of National Accord. And in sports, Croatian 7-seed Marin Cilic reached a fourth successive Wimbledon quarterfinal on Monday after beating Roberta Bautista Agut of Spain. Cilic, the 2014 US Open champion, will look to reach his first semifinal at the All England Club when he faces either two-time champion Rafael Nadal or Gelis Müller of Luxembourg in the eighth. And on women's side, Germany's top seed Angelique Kerber lost to Spain's Gabana Muguruza Blanco, while Venus Williams beat Anna Kuja of Croatia. For more news and information, visit dw.com or download DW app. I'm Jane Ayeko-Kumet.
Welcome once again to the program. My name is Isaac Mugabe.
And I'm Crispin Mwakideo.
We begin today's program in Kenya, where the Electoral Commission has been meeting with presidential candidates in the upcoming elections scheduled for the 8th of August this year in a bid to ensure that the exercise goes on smoothly. The meeting comes a day after one of the presidential candidates, Uhuru Kenyatta, accused three judges of the country's powerful and independent appeals court of conspiring with the opposition party led by Raila Odinga to delay the elections. For more, here's Zipporah Nyambura.
Kenya's electoral body met with the presidential candidates to forge the way forward as campaign intensifies for the elections. It also comes hot on the heels of the latest exchange between the executive and the judiciary over the printing of ballot paper tender. The High Court overruled a decision by the government to award the tender to a Dubai-based company, Algoa. The President Uhuru Kenyatta hit out at the judiciary for the decision.
I am telling the nation, every single individual in Kenya, including the judges, including the IEBC and the opposition, there is nobody who has not been aware that the election shall be on the 8th of August 2017. And I am saying, Kenyans are ready for that date. You change and mess with that date, we will not accept you denying the people of Kenya their constitutional rights to elect their leaders.
Kenya's Electoral Commission Chairman Wafula Chebukati says they will engage with more stakeholders and the presidential candidates to give their views. Kenyans have also been outspoken about the decision by the judiciary about the ballot printing tender.
The president should respect the court because it's through the same court in 2013 which decided that he had won the elections despite some different scandals that were there in the election.
I think when we did the new constitution, our desire was to be able to have a judiciary that was autonomous. And same thing, NASA would be able to comment the same thing. But what we need to be able to do is to fight for a judiciary that is non-partisan, that is going to advocate and execute the rule of law above all else. We have to leave the judiciary to do its work and have confidence that what they are doing is the right thing.
The presidential candidates are said to be divided on whether the ballot printing should now be done locally or with the help of an external firm.
That report was compiled by James Shimanyula in Nairobi. Now, Crispin, this is a story that has been, you know, talked about on the social media. What are people saying?
Exactly. There's a lot of tension, as you can imagine, in Kenya, not just on social media, but also the country itself as it gears for the upcoming elections. Carlos Miguel Diliberto says Africans don't have the mentality of democracy. Losers always complain. It is better we return to kingship rule. Colonel Muammar Gaddafi single-handedly turned Libya to paradise until Mephistophelian Western America brainwashed Libya to practice democracy.
And Hifarawa Issa says, my wish is for Kenyans to have a peaceful election.
I think that's the wish also of many Kenyans as well and Africans. Yeah. Isaac Ehosa Godwin says, I hope observers from around the world are there to monitor any political malpractices. Then we will know if it's free and fair.
And Anangjefa Alagoa says, Kenyan tribal politics has barely moved one inch forward. Keep those comments coming, and my colleague here, Crispin Mwakideu, will keep on reading them whenever he can. Now, allegations of collusion with Russia continue to tarnish the image of Donald Trump's administration since the 2016 election campaign. Things don't seem to be getting any better. Donald Trump's eldest son has admitted to meeting a Russian lawyer last year before the U.S. elections. The meeting also included Trump's senior aides, including his son-in-law, Jared Kushner. Zipporah Nyambura compiled this report.
The latest revelation of Trump's eldest son is a blow to the White House, which has been at pains to explain the alleged Russian connection. It is the first confirmed private meeting between a Russian national and members of President Trump's inner circle. Trump's eldest son says he agreed to meet the Russian lawyer after he was promised damaging information on Trump's rival, Hillary Clinton. But he says the election was not discussed at that meeting. And what does U.S. analyst Boris Forman make of these new developments?
There are two main points of allegation against Trump. One of them is collusion, potential collusion with the Russian government. This story is adding to this narrative. There's another story of obstruction of justice. This is a totally unrelated problem for Trump. Is, in a way, something new in the sense that before we knew there was Paul Manafort, there was Michael Flynn, who were obviously meeting with Russian officials during the campaign and after the victory of the election. But now we know something about the content of these potential meetings, or at least of this one particular meeting, which is a certain willingness to accept information from a foreign government, which is certainly an impeachable offense.
But what is the possible damage to the Trump's administration? U.S. analyst Boris Forman again.
Well, I think it adds. His popularity ratings are very low already. The decisive point will be if there is a political willingness on the side of the GOP, which in turn depends on the electorate, to actually start an impeachment process in the House and then in the Senate. But it might be yet too early to do this kind of thing. But as soon as the Congress election comes closer, the likelihood of this kind of procedure becomes more higher and higher.
Now, it has been 2 days since the G20 summit ended in the German city of Hamburg. Not much interest arose among Africans, despite an initiative aimed at helping people on the continent. One of the key resolutions was to foster sustainable development in Africa. There have been so many strategies put forward to get the continent out of its current position. So what is new about this one? A question I put to Nina Netz from the Friedrich Ebert Stiftung.
To be honest, I think there's not much new for Africa. In general, there's nothing wrong if G20 recognizes and supports sustainable development and also the implementation of 2030 agenda in Africa. But I think we have to be very clear that G20 is a forum without democratic legitimation and that the 20 most powerful economies within G20 discuss topics which have consequences, especially for poorer countries. And as long as Africa will not be represented equally in the G20, there will not be any decision which will help Africa.
Well, many observers have said that the G20 leaders were more interested in their own issues and perhaps the conflict in Syria rather than Africa. What's your take on this? I mean, is this a true reflection of what the G20 this year stood for?
Well, I think G20 is very much interested in Africa, but I think they are interested to explore business opportunities in Africa, and they want to make Africa an investor-friendly and for G20 profitable continent. You can see this in the initiative to build up compacts with certain African countries, where you can see that they fall back behind standards we had in the past, for example, the ILO core labor standards and international human rights. So it's quite clear that they will serve wealthier nations and not the poorest countries in Africa, for example.
Based on what the leaders agreed and coupled with Germany's massive plans for Africa, IGI, what you've just mentioned, the Africa Compact, the Marshall Plan with Africa, how realistic are these plans anyway?
Well, I think they are a reality and they will probably have an impact on Africa. The problem is that there was no consultation of African states or of African civil society while these plans were developed. So I think this is a clear mistake. And for sure, from our perspective, a political dimension is missing. As I said, there are no standards. It's quite clear that the plans are very investor-friendly, and the motivation behind the plans is not to promote sustainable development in Africa, but the motivation is to help the so-called refugee crisis in Europe by creating jobs and employment in Africa.
Nina Netz from the Friedrich Ebert Stiftung. Crispin.
Right, Isaac. There is a big problem in Africa on how to manage West. And we have an article on our page and also on Facebook on how West is being managed in different countries. Martha from Yaounde says, my country don't manage West. Instead, West manages us. Because the government is not willing to educate its citizens about waste management or even give tax incentives to those who are willing to open recycling farms.
Quite interesting. Tito in Nairobi says there's no reliable waste management system in Nairobi. Despite laws on environment, littering is the order of the day in Nairobi neighborhoods.
And Tobua Julius Mvenyi says Cameroon has no sewage system and don't pay workers who are taking the risk to take waste out of the streets in Cameroon.
And Ibrahim London says all these kind of diseases that are affecting people is lack of good administration of our leaders. Please keep on sending those comments on our Facebook page, that's DW Africa, and my colleague Crispin Makidewo and I will read them right on Africa Link whenever we can. And in case you've just tuned in, you're listening to DW's Africa Link program, live from our studios in Bonn, Germany. My name is Isaac Mugabe.
And I'm Crispin Mwakideo.
Coming up, a national campaign to eradicate bilharzia begins in Malawi.
Many people have it, they know, but not everyone appreciates it as a disease.
And the elections in the Democratic Republic of Congo might not take place this year, according to the Electoral Commission.
Exactly, Crispin, and I'll begin on that note in the DRC, where the Electoral Commission says it is not ready to hold elections this year. Opposition parties say this is a ploy to keep President Joseph Kabila in power, which may result in violent conflict. Now, Felix Tshisekedi, the opposition leader, said it was a declaration of war on the Congolese people. Just to remind you, Kabila refused to step down at the end of his second elected term last December, sparking protests in which dozens of people died. So why would the Electoral Commission postpone an already planned election? A question I put to Ben Shepherd, a consulting fellow, African program at the Chatham House. Take a listen.
The scale of the challenge organising elections in a country the size of the DRC, the logistics are extremely complicated. The country is famously huge. A very large number of new voters need to be registered. I think they were talking something in the region of several million. It's very expensive. They have changed electoral boundaries, which need to be defined at local levels, which would dictate where polling stations should go. So there's a huge amount of work that goes into it. The DRC itself, the government estimated a cost of about $1.8 billion early this year and said fairly clearly that they didn't have the money to finance it. And registration has been interrupted in places like the Kasai provinces, former Kasai provinces, where we've seen a lot of violence over the past 6 months and have got off to a slow start. So the fact that the Electoral Commission is saying it's not possible this year, I don't think will come actually as much of a surprise to a lot of observers. People have been fairly sceptical that it would be possible to have these elections arranged this year for quite a long time. So that's the technical reason. Obviously, many in the Congolese opposition see the delay to elections as a political mechanism to extend Joseph Kabila's stay in power, so-called glissement. It's entirely possible that there has been a level of political pressure placed on the Electoral Commission, or that the level of political and financial and logistical backing that they would need to get the elections going this year has not been forthcoming. Obviously, that is not, you know, that's a position that's disputed by all sides.
Yes, and what could a postponement of the election mean in terms of stability within the country?
We have seen last year, notably, at important moments, there has been quite significant public protest. There, you know, the level of support politically for Kabila amongst the Congolese population is extremely low. A great deal of cynicism about the sincerity with which he would want to move towards elections. And I think it's relatively widely viewed that he is attempting to extend his stay in power, despite the fact that his constitutional mandate came to an end in December last year. That doesn't necessarily translate into an immediate risk of large-scale violence. I think there are a couple of reasons for that. The first is it's hard to see who would lead organized opposition to Kabila. Félix Tshisekedi, the man you quoted, is obviously the son of Etienne Tshisekedi, the long-standing pro-democracy campaigner who died earlier this year. His party, the UDPS, has subsequently split between a faction that has joined Kabila's government, the government of national unity put in place after a political deal brokered by the Catholic Church last December, and a group who has rejected joining that government. The UDPS had in the past a cohesive organization across Congo's territory, so officers, activists. That reportedly is much weaker than it was. The rest of the opposition has failed over numerous attempts to come to a compromise position which might allow them to unify behind one candidate. People talk about Moise Katumbi, the former governor of Katanga, as a key figure. Others might be Vital Kamerhe, who's has been in and out of the presidential camp, but is a fairly serious figure in Congolese politics. But that doesn't add up to any one group with the legitimacy and the authority and the capacity to mobilize large numbers of people. My take at this stage is that we are likely to see some level of protest, but that protest won't gain momentum sufficient to create an enormous, approximate risk to the stability of the Congolese state.
Ben Shepherd from Chatham House in London. Now, Crispin, every time we cover a story about elections, people get talking.
Exactly, and especially in the Congo where these elections have been postponed on and
on several occasions. Yeah.
Exactly, and we have a comment from Francis Qatar Mills who says, Kabila has always wanted to hold on to power in the name of their economy, but that should not stop the country from holding elections. All what I know is that most of African leaders are like that. So it's not just Kabila. What
exactly. Yeah. Frederick Mulika, who is from Georgia in the US, says President Kabila should respect the peace accord he signed with the opposition for the sake of peace, to avoid conflict. Otherwise, the country will slide back into conflict.
And Emmanuel Mireku from Accra, Ghana, says it is time the African Union strengthens its laws and ensure individuals with their selfish needs are brought to book for the peace, security and welfare of the Congolese. It's time things are put right.
We will continue to monitor this story as it evolves, and we might come back to it or cover it whenever we can and we have the necessary resources.
Health Check.
For Health Check segment this week, we head to Malawi that has rolled out a campaign against bilharzia disease. The disease is said to be rampant in areas which are also close to lakes or rivers. A lot of people lack knowledge about the disease, putting their lives at risk of contraction. At least 7 million people in Malawi live mostly in bilharzia-prone areas of the disease. From Lilongwe, Chimwe Padeta reports.
Children play and bask in the sun as parents and guardians take turns on the long queues. I'm here at Kawale Primary School, one of the centers where the drug administration program on bilharzia is taking place. Most of the centers have been established in schools since they mainly target children from 5 to 14 years. The media has been running the awareness campaigns, urging parents to take their children for the exercise. There were fears when some children fell unconscious after taking the drug, but it was discovered they had taken the drugs on an empty stomach. This time, such incidents have not been reported. It should be noted that this drug, Praziquantel, is a strong drug and some of its side effects include dizziness, stomach cramps, diarrhea and vomiting, among others. Bilharzia has been here for a long time, but why are many Malawians not aware of it? Dr. Benson Chirima, Acting Director of Preventive Health Services in the Ministry of Health.
Many people have it, they know, but not everyone appreciates it as a disease. What the government has done is we have developed packages which we will give to schools, to other areas of the public, so that everybody learns about it. What are the signs? How do we treat it? And if you don't treat it, what are the real dangers? Because it also leads to several types of cancer. Once you get it today, it stays with you for a very, very long time.
In the previous years, the campaign only targeted people from the hot spots due to financial constraints. But this time, the pills will be administered to everyone in bilharzia-prone areas, such as along water bodies. Those who do not live in the hotspot districts, especially children from the age range of 5 to 14, will also get the drugs. 20% of Malawi's population lives in such areas, making them more vulnerable. A health rights activist, Mazigo Matemba, says it's high time that Malawi stamps out the disease completely to avoid affecting the tourism sector.
We need to have a lot of awareness, and I think there are so many platforms which we can beat, right? The onus is on the authorities, Minister of Health, to make sure that they're able to use the mechanisms which can be able to spread out this message.
Bilharzia is spread through use of contaminated water. Therefore, the risk of getting the disease among those in remote areas is always high. Access to potable water in Malawi is very low in rural areas. The four-day campaign will run in all public and Christian Health Association of Malawi health facilities, primary and secondary schools, and under five clinics.
Chimwe Padeta reporting from Lilongwe. And it's that time of the week when we talk about sports. We are now joined by Matthew Ford from DW's Sports Department, who will start by telling us the much anticipated games in tennis this evening.
Yeah, after a day off on Sunday yesterday, it's the so-called Manic Monday, mm-hmm. which takes place every year at Wimbledon, where every player in the men's and women's draws play on the same day. And in the men's draw, all the big four names are in action. Andy Murray, Roger Federer, Novak Djokovic and Rafael Nadal will all be in action later today.
Okay, well said. Now, these top players, understand, complained about the conditions of the courts at Wimbledon. Have we had any official reaction to that effect?
You're right, yeah. Andy Murray and Roger Federer were probably the two biggest names who voiced criticism. Obviously, the British weather isn't known for its high temperatures, is it? But it has been quite hot in South London, and the courts have been drier. They've been a little bit more slippier than usual. And on Friday, in fact, the American player Bethany Mattek-Sands suffered a horrible knee injury when she twisted and fell on the court, and she's been taken to hospital. The organisers, of course, are very proud of their famous grass courts, and they've said that the courts have been prepared as meticulously as always, but that the grass is, of course, a natural surface, and it can change with the weather, so they've been quite defensive.
To football now, Manchester United's Wayne Rooney returned to his boyhood club, Everton. I mean, what does this return mean, and what kind of reception is expected to receive?
Well, obviously, Wayne Rooney was initially considered a traitor by Everton
fans when
he first left them to join Man United in 2004. But he's always remained an Everton fan. He is from Liverpool. He's a Scouser. And after appearing in a testimonial game last year, he's likely to receive a warm welcome. He's won everything at Manchester United in the 13 years that he's been there. He might not be the dynamic, explosive player that he was as a teenager, but he's won 5 Premier League titles, 1 Champions League, the Europa League, and he's become the club's top scorer with 253 goals. That's more than George Best, more than Ryan Giggs, more than Dennis Law. It's an incredible achievement, and now he's returned to his boyhood club.
Chelsea have completed the signing of German central defender Antonio Rudiger from AS Roma, and Rudiger seems to be thrilled by the move, isn't he? I mean, if we go by what he wrote on Twitter, always believe in oneself. Yeah,
he seems absolutely thrilled. Yeah, as you said, he seems absolutely delighted, and I think it's a good move for both. Obviously, Rudiger was part of the Germany squad which won the Confederations Cup, but he faces stiff competition in defence at Chelsea. Okay, John Terry has now moved on, but David Luiz, the Brazilian, is still there. Gary Cahill, England centre back, is still there. Kurt Zouma is still there, and Andreas Christensen has returned from his loan move at Borussia Mönchengladbach. So, yeah, a good move for Rudiger, but he's got a lot of competition there.
So he has to work hard, yeah?
Going to have to work hard and stay off Twitter, stay off Instagram.
Matthew Ford from the sports department of DW. My colleague Crispin is back here with more of your comments. Crispin, over to you.
Right, Isaac. It's been a while since we covered the crisis that's been ongoing in Cameroon's English-speaking region. Now, our correspondent Adrian Krish has been visiting Bamenda town there. And what is happening there is that there are these ghost towns. People are protesting by not opening their businesses and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So we do have this audio message which was sent to us via WhatsApp, and we begin with that comment.
Hi, this is Aaron Bless, freelance journalist based in Cameroon. I want to say that ghost towns initially put a lot of pressure on the government when the ghost town operations began. But 6 months counting, I don't think the ghost town operations is effective, to the best of my knowledge. I don't think it is effective because most of those who are affected by these ghost town operations every Mondays and sometimes even twice a week are the masses.
Right, and another comment from Amuru Onyena Ego, who says, "We are coming for you all, my Biafran's Cameroon brothers and sisters. We understand your pains, the same pains Biafran's in Nigeria are going through. Be patient, Biafra is on the way. It's time to bring back all Biafra back home." It's all about Biafra now.
It's all about Biafra. Everything is being connected. Now, even last week, they connected to the G20 summit. It was very interesting. Yeah. Anyway, Sachigongo Agujebagnoze says, "I pray that God will give English-speaking side of Cameroon, Catalonians, and we the Biafrans again, freedom, our own nation in a short time."
Atangana Ibrahim says, "It's painful to live in the wild and be oppressed as a minority group, but it's more painful when the wild and mainstream media isolate themselves from the agony of a minority. Long live Southern Cameroon, Ambazonia."
MC Drake says, "The whole of English-speaking part is respecting the ghost town. The people are resolute, for they're seeking something genuine."
And Chukso J. Joe says, "God is at work. Everything we work out by God's grace, this is total liberation we are heading to."
Prince Nwachinyake Sani says after the Arab Spring, the next is change for West Africa and emancipation of metal slavery and oligarchy divide and conquer system.
Almost sounds like Bob Marley there.
Mm-hmm.
And Funesi Prince says we shall resist the oppressor.
Many thanks to all of you who have sent in your comments. Keep on sending them to DW Africa. That's our Facebook page. And we will always read them here on Africa Link. On behalf of the team, I'm Isaac Mugabe.
And I'm Crispin Mwakideo.
Wishing you the best of the day.